Chapter 20. Paul's further progress, growth, and character, beneath the watching and attentive eyes of time, so far another major Paul's slumbers gradually changed. More and more light broken upon them, distincter and distincter dreams disturbed them, an accumulating crowd of objects and impressions swarmed about his rest. And so he passed from babyhood to childhood, and became a talking, walking, wondering dummy. On the downfall and banishment of Richards, the nursery may be said to have been put into commission. As a public department is sometimes, when no individual atlas can be found to support it, the commissioners were, of course, Mrs. Chick and Miss Tox, who devoted themselves to their duties with such astonishing ardor that Major Backstock had every day some new reminder of his being forsaken, while Mr. Chick, bereft of domestic supervision, cast himself upon the gay world, dined at clubs and coffee houses, smelt of smoke on three different occasions, went to the play by himself, and in short, loosened, as Mrs. Chick once told him, every social bond and moral obligation. Yet, in spite of his early promise, all this vigilance and care could not make little Paul a thriving boy. Naturally delicate, perhaps, he pined and wasted after the dismissal of his nurse, and, for a long time, seemed but to wait his opportunity of gliding through their hands, and seeking his lost mother. This dangerous ground in his steeplechase towards manhood passed, he still found it very rough riding, and was grievously beset by all the obstacles in his course. Every tooth was a breakneck fence, and every pimple in the measles a stone wall to him. He was down in every fit of the whooping cough, and rolled upon and crushed by a whole field of small diseases, that came trooping on each other's heels, to prevent his getting up again. Some bird of prey got into his throat instead of the thrush, and the very chickens turning ferocious, if they have anything to do with that infant malady to which they lent their name, worried him like tiger cats. The chill of Paul's christening had struck home, perhaps to some sensitive part of his nature, which could not recover itself in the cold shade of his father, but he was an unfortunate child from that day. Mrs. Wickham often said she never see a dear so put upon. Mrs. Wickham was a waiter's wife, which would seem equivalent to being any other man's widow whose application for an engagement in Mr. Dombey's service had been favorably considered, on account of the apparent impossibility of her having any followers, or anyone to follow, and who, from within a day or two of Paul's sharp weaning, had been engaged as his nurse. Mrs. Wickham was a meek woman, of a fair complexion, with her eyebrows always elevated, and her head always drooping, who was always ready to pity herself, or to be pitied, or to pity anybody else, and who had a surprising natural gift of viewing all subjects in an utterly forlorn and pitiable light, and bringing dreadful precedents to bear upon them, and deriving the greatest consolation from the exercise of that talent. It is hardly necessary to observe that no touch of this quality ever reached the magnificent knowledge of Mr. Dombey. It would have been remarkable, indeed, if any had, when no one in the house, not even Mrs. Chick or Miss Tox, dared ever whisper to him that there had, on any one occasion, been the least reason for uneasiness in reference to little Paul. He had settled, within himself, that the child must necessarily pass through a certain routine of minor maladies, and that the sooner he did so the better. If he could have bought him off, or provided a substitute, as in the case of an unlucky drawing for the militia, he would have been glad to do so, on liberal terms. But as this was not feasible, he merely wondered, in his haughty manner, now and then, what nature meant by it, and comforted himself with the reflection that there was another milestone passed upon the road, and that the great end of the journey lay so much the nearer. For the feeling uppermost in his mind, now and constantly intensifying, and increasing in it as Paul grew older, was impatience. Impatience for the time to come, when his visions of their united consequence and grandeur would be triumphantly realized. Some philosophers tell us that selfishness is at the root of our best loves and affections. apostrophe Mr. Dombey's young child was, from the beginning, so distinctly important to him as a part of his own greatness, or, which is the same thing, of the greatness of Dombey and Son, that there is no doubt his parental affection might have been easily traced, like many a goodly superstructure of fair fame, to a very low foundation. But he loved his son with all the love he had. If there were a warm place in his frosty heart, his son occupied it. If its very hard surface could receive the impression of any image, the image of that son was there, though not so much as an infant, or as a boy, but as a grown man, the son of the firm. Therefore he was impatient to advance into the future, and to hurry over the intervening passages of his history. Therefore he had little, or no anxiety about them, in spite of his love. Feeling as if the boy had a charmed life, and must become the man with whom he held such constant communication in his thoughts, and for whom he planned and projected, as for an existing reality, every day. Thus Paul grew to be nearly 5 years old. He was a pretty little fellow, though there was something wan and wistful in his small face, that gave occasion to many significant shakes of Mrs. Wickham's head, and many long-drawn inspirations of Mrs. Wickham's breath. His temper gave abundant promise of being imperious in after life, and he had as hopeful an apprehension of his own importance, and the rightful subservience of all other things and persons to it, as heart could desire. He was childish and sportive enough at times, and not of a sullen disposition. But he had a strange, old-fashioned, thoughtful way, at other times, of sitting brooding in his miniature armchair, when he looked and talked, like one of those terrible little beings in the fairy tales, who, at 150 or 200 years of age, fantastically represent the children for whom they have been substituted. He would frequently be stricken with this precocious mood upstairs in the nursery, and would sometimes lapse into it suddenly, exclaiming that he was tired. Even while playing with Florence, or driving Miss Tox in single harness. But at no time did he fall into it so surely, as when, his little chair being carried down into his father's room, he sat there with him after dinner, by the fire. They were the strangest pair at such a time, that ever firelight shone upon. Mr. Dombey so erect and solemn, gazing at the glare, his little image, with an old face, peering into the red perspective with the fixed, and rapt attention of a sage. Mr. Dombey entertaining complicated worldly schemes and plans, the little image entertaining heaven knows what wild fancies, half-formed thoughts, and wandering speculations. Mr. Dombey stiff with starch and arrogance, the little image by inheritance, and in unconscious imitation. The two so very much alike, and yet so monstrously contrasted. On one of these occasions, when they had both been perfectly quiet for a long time, and Mr. Dombey only knew that the child was awake by occasionally glancing at his eye, where the bright fire was sparkling like a jewel, little Paul broke silence thus. Papa, what's money? Apostrophe, the abrupt question had such immediate reference to the subject of Mr. Dombey's thoughts, that Mr. Dombey was quite disconcerted. What is money, Paul? Apostrophe, he answered. Money? Apostrophe, yes, apostrophe, said the child, laying his hands upon the elbows of his little chair, and turning the old face up towards Mr. Dombey's. What is money? Apostrophe, Mr. Dombey was in a difficulty. He would have liked to give him some explanation involving the terms circulating medium, currency, depreciation of currency, paper, bullion, rates of exchange, value of precious metals in the market, and so forth. But looking down at the little chair, and seeing what a long way down it was, he answered. Gold, and silver, and copper. Guineas, shillings, halfpence. You know what they are? Apostrophe, oh yes, I know what they are, apostrophe, said Paul. I don't mean that, Papa. I mean what's money after all? Apostrophe, heaven and earth, how old his face was as he turned it up again towards his father's. What is money after all? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Domney, backing his chair a little, that he might the better gaze in sheer amazement at the presumptuous Adam that propounded such an inquiry. I mean, Papa, what can it do? Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Paul, folding his arms, they were hardly long enough to fold, and looking at the fire, and up at him, and at the fire, and up at him again. Mr. Domney drew his chair back to its former place, and patted him on the head. You'll know better by and by, my man, apostrophe, he said. Money, Paul, can't do anything. Apostrophe, he took hold of the little hand, and beat it softly against one of his own, as he said so. But Paul got his hand free, as soon as he could, and rubbing it gently to and fro on the elbow of his chair, as if his wit were in the palm, and he were sharpening it and looking at the fire again, as though the fire had been his adviser and prompter, repeated, after a short pause. Anything, Papa? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. Anything almost, apostrophe, said Mr. Domney. Anything means everything, don't it, Papa? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked his son, not observing, or possibly not understanding, the qualification. It includes it. Yes, apostrophe, said Mr. Domney. Why didn't money save me my mama? Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned the child. It isn't cruel, is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cruel. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Domney, settling his neckcloth, and seeming to resent the idea. No. A good thing can't be cruel. Apostrophe, if it's a good thing, and can do anything, apostrophe, said the little fellow, thoughtfully, as he looked back at the fire, I wonder why it didn't save me my mama. Apostrophe, he didn't ask the question of his father this time. Perhaps he had seen, with a child's quickness, that it had already made his father uncomfortable. But he repeated the thought aloud, as if it were quite an old one to him, and had troubled him very much, and sat with his chin resting on his hand, still cogitating and looking for an explanation in the fire. Mr. Domney, having recovered from his surprise, not to say his alarm, for it was the very first occasion on which the child had ever broached the subject of his mother to him, though he had had him sitting by his side, in this same manner, evening after evening, expounded to him how that money, though a very potent spirit, never to be disparaged on any account whatever, could not keep people alive whose time was come to die, and how that we must all die, unfortunately, even in the city, though we were never so rich. But how that money caused us to be honored, feared, respected, courted, and admired, and made us powerful and glorious in the eyes of all men, and how that it could, very often, even keep off death, for a long time together. How, for example, it had secured to his mama the services of Mr. Pilkins, by which he, Paul, had often profited himself, likewise of the great Dr. Parker Peps, whom he had never known, and how it could do all that could be done. This, with more to the same purpose, Mr. Domney instilled into the mind of his son, who listened attentively, and seemed to understand the greater part of what was said to him. It can't make me strong, and quite well either, Papa, can it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Paul, after a short silence, rubbing his tiny hands. Why, you are strong and quite well, apostrophe, returned Mr. Domney. Are you not? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, the age of the face, that was turned up again, with an expression, half of melancholy, half of slyness, on it. You are as strong and well as such little people usually are? Eh? Apostrophe, said Mr. Domney. Florence is older than I am, but I'm not as strong and well as Florence, I know, apostrophe, returned the child, and I believe that, when Florence was as little as me, she could play a great deal longer at a time without tiring herself. I am so tired sometimes, apostrophe, said little Paul, warming his hands, and looking in between the bars of the grate, as if some ghostly puppet show were performing there, and my bones ache, so Wickham says it's my bones, that I don't know what to do. Apostrophe, eh? But that's at night, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, drawing his own chair closer to his son's, and laying his hand gently on his back. Little people should be tired at night, for then they sleep well. Apostrophe, oh, it's not at night, Papa, apostrophe returned the child, it's in the day, and I lie down in Florence's lap, and she sings to me. At night I dream about such cubic rye-house things. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and he went on, warming his hands again, and thinking about them, like an old man or a young goblin. Mr. Dombey was so astonished, and so uncomfortable, and so perfectly at a loss, how to pursue the conversation, that he could only sit looking at his son by the light of the fire, with his hand resting on his back, as if it were detained there by some magnetic attraction. Once he advanced his other hand, and turned the contemplative face towards his own for a moment. But it sought the fire again, as soon as he released it, and remained, addressed towards the flickering blaze, until the nurse appeared, to summon him to bed. I want Florence to come for me, apostrophe said Paul. Won't you come with your poor nurse Wickham, Master Paul? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired that attendant, with great pathos. No, I won't, apostrophe, replied Paul, composing himself in his armchair again, like the master of the house. Invoking a blessing upon his innocence, Mrs. Wickham withdrew, and presently Florence appeared in her stead. The child immediately started up with sudden readiness and animation, and raised towards his father in bidding him good night, a countenance so much brighter, so much younger, and so much more childlike altogether, that Mr. Dombey, while he felt greatly reassured by the change, was quite amazed at it. After they had left the room together, he thought he heard a soft voice singing, and remembering that Paul had said his sister sung to him, he had the curiosity to open the door and listen, and look after them. She was toiling up the great, wide, vacant staircase, with him in her arms. His head was lying on her shoulder, one of his arms thrown negligently round her neck. So they went, toiling up, she singing all the way, and Paul sometimes crooning out a feeble accompaniment. Mr. Dombey looked after them until they reached the top of the staircase, not without halting to rest by the way, and passed out of his sight, and then he still stood gazing upwards, until the dull rays of the moon, glimmering in a melancholy manner through the dim skylight, sent him back to his room. Mrs. Chick and Miss Tox were convoked in council at dinner next day, and when the cloth was removed, Mr. Dombey opened the proceedings, by requiring to be informed, without any gloss or reservation, whether there was anything the matter with Paul, and what Mr. Pilkins said about him. For the child is hardly, apostrophe said Mr. Dombey, as stout as I could wish. Apostrophe, my dear Paul, apostrophe returned Mrs. Chick, with your usual happy discrimination, which I am weak enough to envy you, every time I am in your company, and so I think, is Miss Tox, oh my dear. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Miss Tox, softly, how could it be otherwise? Presumptuous as it is to aspire to such a level, still, if the bird of night may, but I'll not trouble Mr. Dombey with the sentiment. It. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.